Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Network Indiana's Indiana Sports Talk. I'm Bob Lovell. It's brought to you by Indiana Donor Network. DrivenToSaveLives.org is their website. We got a lot of basketball, football, baseball. We got it all tonight. We're glad you're with us right now, though. The star of our show every 15 minutes is going to be Corbin Lingenfelter.
Thank you, Coach Lovell. It's great to be with you and Landon Coons on this busy day of baseball and other sports across the state of Indiana. But let's start with a little bit of basketball. It's no secret the Pacers lost last night 129-120 to Cleveland in a game that could have given them the guaranteed sixth seed in the playoffs. It was an all-around struggle for the Pacers, and things got a little testy in the post-game conversation with head coach Rick Carlisle.
Rick, what do you feel like this one got away from you guys defensively, especially in the first half when they scored 70 points?
Well, the first half wasn't...
bench wasn't as effective, especially in that first half, as they have been in recent games. Did you see some with them that wasn't working the same way it usually was? It felt like they got it together a little bit in the second half.
Four out of the five guys were a plus, and one guy was minus two. And, you know, compared to our starters that were a huge minus, I'm not sure what you're talking about.
A little bit of technical difficulties on my end, Carlisle, on the Pacers YouTube page after that. Indiana will take on the Atlanta Hawks coming up tomorrow. In Major League Baseball, though, the St. Louis Cardinals are at a 1-1 draw with the Arizona Diamondbacks midway through the sixth. And then later on tonight, Chicago Cubs are taking on the Seattle Mariners. For Network Indiana Sports, I'm Corbin Lingenfelter.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Bob Lovell. This is Network Indiana's Indiana Sports Talk. Let's start it off by talking about some baseball. Indianapolis Indians tonight, doubleheader at against the Toledo Mud Hens. Not a good day for the Indians. They dropped both. Hall of Famer, legendary voice of the Indians, Howard Kelman, joins me. Howard, thanks for the call. Tough, tough night for the Indians tonight.
Well, it really was, Bob. And the first game, they scored two runs immediately, got a two-run homer with one out in the top of the first against by Leover Peguero. So they're immediately leading 2-0, and then they have first and third in that inning with two outs, do no further scoring, and they don't do any further scoring the rest of the game. So they lose the game 3-2. And what's really interesting, that dropped the Indians' record to 6-7, and of those seven losses, six have been by one run. Now, the second game was a different story. Toledo got seven runs against Cam Aldridge in the first inning, and that was the game. They added on to that, too, and they won the game 13-4. So the second game was just one of those rough days you have every once in a while, but another tough loss in the opener. And the club is playing pretty solid baseball, despite a rough series here in which they dropped four of the first five. Today was a big day. Look, you lose two. Last Saturday, the Indians won a doubleheader at home against Memphis.
Right.
One more game left on the road trip tomorrow afternoon.
I think the disappointing thing, you know, you lose two. I got that. But game one, you get eight hits. Game two, you have 15 hits. You're moving the ball, you're moving the bats, things aren't going well. I'm sorry, that first game you got seven hits, and you had six hits in the second game. Toledo was knocking the ball all over the yard in that second game with 15 hits. But, you know, you had base runners, you had opportunities, and you and I talk about it all the time. Timely hitting and great pitching can win you games, and just left some people on base.
Exactly. And that stat, RISP in the box score, runners in scoring position.
Right.
How did you do then? And the Indians didn't fare well then. And that's why, you know, some of these newer analytic people will tell you that there's no such thing as clutch hitting, which is a ridiculous comment. Because how you hit in the clutch, how you hit men in scoring position in the end determines how successful you are. It comes down to timely hitting, because usually if you get the timely hitting, you win. Of course, there are other factors, like you got to get good bullpen, good starting pitching. But they didn't hit, as you're right, Bob, they didn't have the timely hitting today. It started out great. I mean, if I were to tell you three men have come to the plate in the first inning and you already have two runs, you wouldn't believe me if I told you you wouldn't score the rest of the game. That's what makes baseball the game that it is. It is so unpredictable.
All right, so what's up tomorrow? Tell me something good to get excited about.
Michael Plassmeyer is the Indians' probable 2 o'clock game. Indians bus home from Toledo after the game. Victory Field will be the place to be beginning Tuesday, 6:05 start, dollar menu in effect, and the St. Paul Saints are in to begin a 6-game series.
Howard Gelman, Hall of Famer for a reason, legendary voice of the Indianapolis Indians. When you're at the ballpark, when you're at Victory Field, go to the gift store, buy his book, 61 Humorous and Inspiring Lessons I Learned from Baseball. I've read it twice. Howard, I've read it twice, just so you know. Still like it. I may read it that third time, because you know me, I love baseball. Howard, thanks. We'll talk to you next weekend.
Bob, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, we're off and running. Corbin Lingenfelter, how are you tonight? I'm glad you're back. I haven't had you. You haven't been with us for a while, right?
Not on updates. I was with you on producing last Friday night.
That there's that memory of mine again. I don't remember.
Well, but now in you're your back. Defense, Jake Lane did produce the whole show. I was just in the background.
Well, Jake did a great job.
Yes, he did.
Way to cover for me, too. I appreciate that.
I got your back, Coach.
Yeah, that's good. So we're going to have Coach Matthew Graves join us later on tonight. Brand new coach at Indiana State. I've known him for a while, obviously, especially when I was running all the basketball in the Horizon League, and he was part of the staff at Butler. Played, obviously, everyone knows that. And so I'm looking forward to it. I really am. And it's going to be fun. We're going to have some fun. I think he's going to have a great time. Things are going to go well. We'll come back, spend some more time with Corbin, talk more ball. We got a lot of things to talk about, some racing, some basketball, baseball, football. We'll talk about Purdue basketball, Purdue football. That's all coming up on Indiana Sports Talk. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Bob Lovell. This is Network Indiana's Indiana Sports Talk, brought to you by Indiana Donor Network. Greg Rakestraw joins us tonight, the most versatile broadcaster in the state. He's really, really good at what he does. He's, frankly, the best at what he does. Tonight, he's working as the voice of the Indianapolis 11. The 11 lose 4-2 to Charleston. Greg, thanks for the call. Sorry that it wasn't better for the good guys.
Yeah, this completes kind of a really rugged portion of the schedule for the Indy 11. They have played now the three top teams in the Eastern Conference, and while I think Indy had hoped to be a little bit more competitive, especially in the last two games, it's just kind of a recognition that there is still some work to do for a team that is still kind of gelling and figuring out under new head coach and Sean McCauley. Charleston was the Eastern Conference champs last year. They lost the championship match in penalties. They are unbeaten in 7 matches so far this year. And while Indy had a 2-1 lead in the first half, Charleston equalized before halftime. They scored twice in the second half, and Indy kind of left scratching their heads after giving up now 9 goals in their last 2 games.
It's kind of surprising, too, isn't it, giving up that many goals? Because, you know, early on, you thought that defense would be something. You know, they had a great defensive run a year ago. You would have thought that's not something they'd be plagued by.
Yeah, and that's a good observation by you. And, again, while they have changed head coaches, going from Mark Lowry to Sean McCauley, and Sean plays a little more aggressive style, and Sean has a little – you know, less of a possession style than what Mark Lowry played, a lot of the defensive pieces are the same. And so the fact that they have struggled in terms of letting in goals, I mentioned the 9 in the last 2 games, they've given up 2 or 6 outings so far. They've given up 15 so far during the course of the season. That's a problem. You know, there are certain numbers you look at and you go, that's not a winning number. You and I know that in basketball. We'll see certain numbers for teams doing an IUPUI game and go, that's not good. If you're allowing more than 2 goals a game in professional soccer, that is a problem. And so that is something this team has to rectify quick, fast, and in a hurry. And there's not going to be a lot of time in the training pitch this week. They'll play an Open Cup match up at Chicago Fire 2 coming up on Wednesday night. They will hop on a plane and head to Colorado Springs to play a league match on Saturday night. Maybe that's the best thing for this group, is just kind of play their way through it right now. Again, it is very early in the season. Six matches in, 28 more to go.
Right.
But to be sitting on 4 points after the first six matches, I think they're, frankly, even with a new head coach, I think there were higher expectations for this group.
So the coach in me wants to ask the question, are these problems solvable?
I think they are. Again, just because there really is a great amount of depth on this team. And there are guys that have
done
in this league for a long time. You know, Jack Blake is their leading goal scorer. He's got four this year. Frankly, him scoring goals is a little something new. He's always been a solid player, but kind of usually more of the guy that sets up the goal than scores. He's got more goals this year than he had last year when he had three. We got two of the top 10 goal scorers in league history in terms of Sebastian Guenzatti and Augie Williams. Sebastian had a goal tonight for the Indy 11. He's now got 72 for his career. That's tied for sixth best in the history of the league. Augie's got just one so far this year. He had double-digit goals each of the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. I think he'll figure it out. I just think it's a matter of kind of finding the right pieces and maybe finding the right balance offensively and defensively. The talent is there. It's just a kind of a matter as to when this group figures it out as a collective at this point.
It's a good point. I know when we talked with Coach at the beginning of the season, I asked him about, this team's strength, and his immediate response was their balance and their depth. And those are things that you can build on. It certainly is disappointing to start out this way. But again, as you point out, let's remember we're early. No need to jump off the top of the – well, no need to jump off the top of Carroll Stadium just yet, right? Everybody hang on. All right, can you hang on through this short break?
Don't ever jump off the top of Carroll Stadium for any reason.
No.
But especially for six games.
No.
And yes, Bob, I will not jump off the phone line. I will hang with you.
Good. All right, Greg Rakestraw, who happens to be the best at what he does, will stay with us and – we'll come back and talk. We'll talk. That's it. That's all I have. We're going to come back and talk.
It was a busy day of high school baseball across the state of Indiana. Earlier on, Mount Vernon took down Gibson Southern 4-3. Calumet Christian put up 10-0 on Hammond Central. Fort Wayne Snyder won 5-3 over Fort Wayne Northrop. Bloomington North came away with a 3-run victory over Martinsville 7-4. Eastern Hancock fell by 17, 20-3 to Knightstown. Bishop Luers fell by 7 to Leo 7-0. Oak Hill fell to Bluffton 7-1. And Madison took down Lanesville 11-4. Other games happening included Evansville North beating Tell City 10-0. Pike falling to Western Boone 8-2. Warren Central fell 5-0. Then over in Major League Baseball, the Arizona Diamondbacks have taken a 3-run lead on the St. Louis Cardinals 4-1, both teams with 6 hits. That game's in the bottom of the 6th inning. Right now, starting in the middle of the 1st inning, the Cubs and the Mariners are tied at 0. Earlier on, the Yankees defeated the Cleveland Guardians 3-2, and the Detroit Tigers fell to the Minnesota Twins in 12 innings 11-5. We had heard earlier from the voice of the Indianapolis Indians, Howard Kelman. They fall tonight to Toledo 13-4. The South Bend Cubs, they currently are winners over Wisconsin 11-3.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Bob Lovell. This is Network Indiana's Indiana Sports Talk, brought to you by Indiana Donor Network. Greg Rakestraw is with us, returns with us. He had the call of the Indy 11 loss tonight, 4-2 to Charleston. Greg, the most versatile sportscaster in our state, does everything. He and I are teammates on the IUPUI basketball broadcast on ESPN Plus, and you know him as part of the Indianapolis Colts Radio Network. Let's talk Colts, Greg. The draft, when is the draft, is coming up soon, correct?
Correct. So because of the success of Purdue and Indiana State deep into the basketball tournaments, the draft has kind of snuck up on us a little bit this year.
The draft, yeah, it has. No question.
2 weeks from today, the draft will be done. So a three-day event, April 25th, 26th, 27th. First round pick the 25th, second round picks the 26th, the third round picks as well. Fourth through seventh rounds will be on Saturday the 27th. And the Colts have seven picks this year. No trades, nothing along those lines. They have their seven picks, one in each round, one in the middle of each round, and their first round pick will be at spot number 15.
So the obvious questions are needs, what they do. But you're right. And to go back, there hasn't been a lot of discussion about this. It's all been about it's been about basketball. It's been about Purdue and their run, Indiana State and their run, and Caitlin Clark and her run. And so now, yeah, you start to go into overdrive about the Colts and things that they need to do to shore up this team and make a run. Number one is they need to make sure Anthony Richardson is healthy, and I'm sure that's all going well. But beyond that, what are some of the perceived needs that they have with this group?
Well, clearly, you know, in terms of a free agency standpoint, the Colts prioritize re-signing their own. You know, in terms of,
right,
you know, players from other places, they got some defensive tackle depth in terms of Raekwon Davis from Miami. Because of Gardner Minshew going to the Las Vegas Raiders, almost said Oakland, you know, Joe Flacco was brought in. Other than that, literally every other kind of key piece was kept. You know, Zach Moss was not brought back, but there's going to be so many carries taken up by Jonathan Taylor, Trey Sermon behind him. You know, Evan Hull was a guy they drafted last year that got hurt very early in the preseason. Maybe he's a guy to get some playing time in the backfield. Colts felt they could let Zach Moss go, and he's not going to be down in Cincinnati. But everybody else, Michael Pittman Jr., Grover Stewart, Julian Blackmon, extension for Zaire Franklin, Tyquan Lewis, Rigoberto Sanchez. I've never seen the Colts re-sign this many of their own free agents in terms of one class. So what does that leave? That leaves probably a need at wide receiver. And that's where need meets depth in the draft. This is a loaded wide receiver class. I think the Colts will likely go receiver at 15 if they don't go with a variation of receiver at 15, which is tight end. There's Brock Bowers, the young man from Georgia, that is thought to be one of the better tight end prospects coming out of college football in some time. The Colts have a lot of guys in the tight end room. I'm not sure they have the guy in the tight end room. If Bowers gets to 15, I think it'll be very hard for the Colts to pass him up. So wide receiver, tight end would be the big needs offensively. Defensively, you'd probably say cornerback position, but the Colts have youth at cornerback. You know, what a lot of us thought you might see happen, I mean, not a top-tier free agent, but kind of a secondary free agent brought in at the cornerback spot. Colts did not do that. They invested three draft picks in terms of corners last year. You know, two of those guys saw time in terms of Juju Brents, who was in and out of the lineup. The second-round pick from Warren Central, played at both Iowa and Kansas State, was effective when he was in there, just has to stay healthy. Jalen Jones was a guy that I think was kind of a bonus for him. Seventh-round pick out of Texas A&M. They like him as a depth piece. And, of course, don't forget Dallas Flowers, who was lost early for the season due to a leg injury. He was in his second year. He's a young man that spent time at Grandview at the NAIA level and Pitt State at the Division II level. But as a major, you know, level athlete, they think he can come back and be a difference maker for them. So maybe you see cornerback at some point in time, first couple of days in the draft. But I do think the obvious look is for wide receiver or tight end, somebody that can be an offensive starter from day number one.
Well, I think that's that makes a whole lot of sense. Do you think they'll take more than one wide receiver?
It's certainly possible. You know, Michael Pittman is your number one. Josh Downs, you know, broke the rookie record for passes caught that dated back to Bill Brooks in 86. That was a 37-year-old record that Downs set last year. I think he's your slot receiver, your number three. You know, Alec Pierce has kind of been that number two. He was a second-round pick 2 years ago. Maybe he's better served potentially being a little further down the depth chart, being more of a big play threat. And Ashton Doolin missed the entirety of last year. He's a guy that also can be a big play threat, but he's also kind of what you want your fifth receiver to be, and that's a guy who's a special teams ace, and Doolin clearly brings that to the team. So I kind of think he's your five. There were some weeks where the Colts carried four receivers. I think in a perfect world they would carry five. So I do think that at least a wide receiver early is going to be the play for a guy that can see immediate playing time. And then there are certain guys that you draft every year because those are the players that are going to, you know, battle for special teams and maybe practice squad guys, especially with so many of your own free agents being re-signed. So I could easily see the Colts literally on the third day of the draft taking additional cornerbacks, taking additional wide receivers as potential special teamers or even practice squad-level players for this team in 2024.
Do we have knowledge of the recuperation of Anthony Richardson, how that's going?
Holder was down in Florida and kind of was able to see how Anthony's rehab is coming along. He is making all the progress, all of the steps. And again, when he had that shoulder surgery after week five, the timeline was always, hey, should be fully healthy by April and May. Well, April and May is when you start having those organized team activities. You're never putting pads on in April, May, or early June. You start putting the pads on, well, you're never hitting the quarterback by the time you get to July and August. So he's hitting all the mileposts so far, but it's not like there is this pressing need. He can take his time, get to the rehab. He'll take part in the OTA stuff. He'll be fine by training camp.
He's the best. Greg Rigstrom. Greg, thanks for the call. Have a great weekend.